Welcome to this fifth episode of Marketing in the Age of COVID-19 from Microwave Journal and Signal Integrity Journal. In the last episode, we looked at how to find success with virtual events. And in this episode, we're going to cover making the most of podcasts and webinars. I'm Pat Hindle, and I'm here with two guest experts from the industry here to help me. We have Chris Markey, CEO, and Doug Jorgensen, Vice President of Engineering, both from Markey Microwave. Welcome, guys.
Hi, Pat. Hey, Pat.
You are both well-versed in doing webinars and podcasts, having done a bunch of them with Markey and also with media companies. We're in the process of doing our three-part series podcast on how Markey Microwave evolved into a cutting-edge mimic company, and that's going very well. So Chris, what has been your overall strategy and goals for podcasts and webinars?
Our strategy and goals are, I guess, in line with what our general company approach is, which is to create state-of-the-art components that help our customers shatter performance barriers. So I guess for us, marketing is synonymous with reaching out to our core customer group, which are primarily RF designers, to help them design systems. And so we pride ourselves on being an engineering-first company, and we're run by engineers. I'm an engineer. Doug's an engineer. We're two of the top officers in the company, and so all of our marketing flows out of this notion that we want to provide information. We want to be thought leaders for our customers. And the webinars and the podcasts offer different, I guess, avenues to provide that kind of content.
Doug, how effective have you found podcasts and webinars to be in delivering your content?
We've definitely found them to be extremely effective. That's why we keep doing them, obviously. When you're trying to reach an audience, when you're thinking about marketing messages, you think about how many people you're reaching. You think about whether those people that you're reaching are the target audience. You know, are they your core customers, or are they people that aren't very interested in your products? And you think about how engaged they are. So even though you might not get as many, even though you might not have as many people watching a webinar or listening to a podcast as you could through some other marketing channel, the people that are there tend to be core customers, and they tend to be very engaged. Especially when you have interaction, you know, when your people are asking you questions and they're talking to you. A lot of times we will hear from our core customers later. They'll email us or they'll call us and they'll say we listened to your podcast or we listened to your webinar. So in terms of really reaching your core customers in a good way, we found them to be very effective.
Chris, what are the advantages of doing podcasts compared to other digital tools?
For me, I think it's kind of like the authentic humanness of it, if you will. For us, the podcasts are entirely improvised. We just have a little bit of a notional outline. We'll sit down for 15 minutes beforehand, maybe sketch out where we want to go. It's kind of like, I like the analogy of maybe blues or jazz playing, where you have a chord progression you write beforehand, and everybody knows the cue, everybody knows the turnaround, and then Doug and I sort of improvise over that as we try to create interesting content. And so for me, the podcast is really an extension of the conversations that we have every day in lab. They're conversations Doug and I have had since we were in grad school, starting in 2004, I think, for Doug, or 2005. So for 15 years, we've had the conversations, and I think only recently we decided that we should maybe record them, because both of us have always been friends with many engineers, and I think that we have good stories to tell, and we have some funny things to say. So yeah, it's just like this sort of down-to-earth conversation that we want to have that, like Doug says, is very specific, I think, to what RF engineers specifically and engineers in general find entertaining.
Are they a little bit limiting because it's just voice? Is there like one place you'd use podcasts instead of webinars?
No, they're not limiting. It's really about what you're trying to do. I think for us, podcasts are where we just sit down and try to be normal human beings. maybe that's part of the attack plan for us, or the strategy is that We don't view ourselves as like a stodgy big corporate structured company. And so we're trying to actually get away from that very much in the podcast and just be regular people, really. My title says CEO, but I don't feel like I'm the kind of person that sits in meetings all day. I actually design our stuff. And so so the podcast is that. And then the webinar is really where we try to have a more orchestrated and official lecture, if you will, on how to use our products and what the products do in general.
Doug, when would you suggest using webinars compared to some of the other digital tools?
Well, like Chris said, podcasts are for, you know, a casual conversation. And I would say that there's a whole spectrum of marketing materials that matches to content, from podcasts, which are just a conversation, to webinars where you're trying to present some technical content. And then there's tech notes where you're trying to present some kind of short technical content. And then there's app notes. And our app notes, we try to be, you know, extremely comprehensive, a single source with deep technical content that is peer reviewed. So for us, the highest bar for any of our marketing content is our app notes, which we see as a meaningful technical contribution. Webinars have the advantage over something like a tech note or an app note in that they're interactive. And so you can get some kind of real-time feedback from your audience about whether they understand the concepts and they can ask you questions immediately after, or depending on how you structure the webinar in the middle of your presentation. And so it has to be a little bit less technical than a tech note, in the sense that you want your audience to keep up with you and they're new to the material. So you kind of have to pace it such that anybody can understand it in real time. You don't want to lose the audience, but you can present pretty technical content because you have the ability to show graphics and figures. And that's really what the core of the presentation should be, is about the graphics, and they should demonstrate the ideas that you're trying to show.
Chris, what's your primary advice for giving companies that are just starting out with podcasts? I think you like them because they're pretty, low key on having to prep a long time, and you don't need a lot of equipment, so there's a low barrier to entry. What do you see as good advice?
What I see as always good advice is to try and do what Dan Carlin says, who's the host of Hardcore History, and I guess like an idol of Doug and mine, because we both listen to his podcast religiously. And his advice is always to narrowcast, meaning that find the niche. Find the thing you're good at specifically that you find interesting, and find the three other people in the world who like that. So this goes back to Doug's statement earlier. We're not trying to be generally interesting to everyone, because when you do that, you end up actually, I think, sanitizing a lot of what you say. In fact, you know, we have deleted many, many hours of tape that we either thought wasn't interesting enough to our core audience, or frankly was like too offensive to be professional, because sometimes in those conversations, you're going to say things that actually might not be appropriate for a business type podcast, but they're things that you hear from engineers all the time. So it's like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, find your niche. Don't worry too much about the broad audience, and like find your voice. I think that's like a famous saying, I think from Miles Davis, where he said, the hardest thing I ever had to do was learn to play like myself. And I think it's very obvious when you're listening to a podcast, or really any content creator out there, whether they're like a Twitch host or a YouTube channel or something like that, you can tell the people that are being themselves, and you can tell the people that are being fake. There's something, I think human beings like innately understand this. And so it's a lot easier said than done. My advice, and I think Doug and I live up to this in some sense, is that we are exactly like we are on the podcast as we are in real life. There's not this sort of fake broadcaster concept. And there's not this, I like to think of it as like the marketing sheen that you, when you meet like a marketing director of a company, and they're a certain way. And then you're like, are they really like that in real life? Like Doug and I are like this, and hopefully people like the podcast. And if they don't, there's like 10 million other podcasts uploaded daily to listen to. So I'm okay with that.
How about on the equipment side? Is there any specific equipment people need?
No, you can start out with something really simple. A webcam will have an audio mic, your phone, but you can always just buy a simple condenser mic for a couple hundred dollars and an A to D converter. Those audio A to Ds are awesome. So for less than $500, you're up and running.
Doug, what's your primary advice for giving companies that are just starting out with webinars?
Well, my primary advice is congratulations. I'm glad you're doing webinars. They're worthwhile. I think that you will find that they're effective, and more companies should do them, because I like going to webinars, and it takes out time from your day. But I think that there's not really a faster way to learn something, because it in some way makes you focus. So I think that I would encourage companies to get started with webinars. The first thing that you have to do is decide what you have to say. Like Chris said, you have to find your voice. You have to figure out what your message is. You have to figure out what you as a company have to offer that people are going to want to hear. And it's probably something around your core, you know, it's whatever the reason for your business existing is. It's probably something that you're going to build your core message around, right? So that's somewhat obvious. But a lot of times, companies, especially in the microwave industry, don't do a great job of making that information public. Like, you go to a website and you see the list of products, but you have to do, you know, as a customer, you have to do your homework to figure out what it is that the company is bringing to the table that's different from every other company. And so I think that's how you have to focus, you know, that's how you have to focus your marketing is getting that idea out. And a webinar is a great way to do that. So the basics of delivering a webinar, most webinars are essentially presentations. You can do other things. You can do demonstrations. You could do, you know, you could get on a whiteboard and do a derivation if you wanted to, but I haven't seen those be very effective so far. So you have to be able to give a good presentation. And that means that you have to understand what your message is and your audience is. And each slide needs to have a specific message, and the slide has to support that message. So get good at giving presentations, put some practice into it, and then promote it. And I would say for a company that is just starting out, I would recommend definitely partnering with Microwave Journal to promote it. You know, if you don't have a big reach, Microwave Journal has the biggest reach and the best audience and can really get your message out there. As you get more developed, you wanted to promote it through your own sales network. You want to have your salespeople go reach out to the specific customers that you want to attend and let them know, because they're busy and they might not hear about it. If you can reach the right engineering managers, then sometimes they'll bring a whole group to hear what you have to say. And then we also promote them through LinkedIn, and LinkedIn's been a pretty effective way to, in terms of like a social network, LinkedIn's really the only effective one, in my opinion.
I like all that advice. Yeah, I think on my side, we advise companies, you know, whether it's podcasts or webinars, to, you know, at least keep them educational. Sometimes companies tend to make them promotional or product pitches, and that just never works well on attracting a wide audience. You know, engineers, they want to be, you know, educated. They want to keep up to date on new design techniques, new measurement techniques. And if you can present that in an educational manner, you can always work in a little bit of your product being capable of doing that, but then you're viewed as the expert, and that really goes a long way in promoting your company.
You definitely have to be able to provide some kind of value for the person that's coming. You have to provide something to your audience that is going to make them want to show up.
So Chris, how do you decide whether to do a podcast or a webinar with your content?
Well, it's not really, they're kind of unrelated for us. It's more of a question of what we have time to do and what we feel like our needs are. All of our webinars lately came out of the fact that we're, you know, work from home, shelter in place, all this stuff. So when Doug and I, when we walked into the COVID crisis 2.5 months ago or so, Doug and I were trying to just figure out ways of keeping engineers occupied and adding, you know, value to their salary. So it was really like just a pure capitalist question of what are these guys going to do when they're not in lab? So we came up with a series of webinars, which were really just us asking the technical staff, can we create content for the customers to help them learn while they're also at home? And it has a secondary effect for Doug and I guess, because Doug's VP, I'm CEO. We really want to push the responsibility of educating customers down our technical chain, such that, you know, the lowest ranking engineer at Markey can be useful to our customers. A really effective way of doing that is to force them to make presentations, because it's nerve wracking. So I did a webinar with Harley, who's one of our younger engineers, and he made me look stupid, because in our first practice round, he had practiced and I didn't, and it was obvious. So it was like, you know, it would have been like, you know, Tom Brady showing up to practice and like not reading the playbook. It was like, I was just making a mess of it. I was rambling. And then Harley came in and nailed his side of it. So the presentations are really good actually for cultivating talent, I think, because those skills are, you know, it's not that they're poorly taught in school. It's just that they're not necessary in school. But in real life and in actual engineering work, it is necessary to communicate your message and your knowledge. And they always say, teaching somebody is the best way to learn something. And so when I asked Harley to learn about how to describe mixer spurs, he had to spend hours really honing the understanding, because, and he walked into it not really knowing. I was obvious to me when he was explaining it early on, but then at the end, I was like, he finally got it. So there's that. I don't even know what the question was, Pat.
I think you answered it.
All right, there you go.
Yeah, I have checked out your site lately. You guys have so much content now, kind of a whole virtual library of educational material, so it's great.
Yeah, you can't fake content.
Doug, what type of content is most effective in delivering your message?
I think that it depends on, so educational content. It has to be something that's teaching the customer something. And then within that, there's a pretty broad range of what you can say. And this is something that I've found with doing webinars with different engineers. If you look at what Chris presents versus what I present versus what another engineer like Rob or Harley or Jacob presents, they're all different. And that's okay. That's, you know, it's just different people are comfortable presenting different kind of stuff. The kind of information that I would like to present personally is high level, fast, the bare minimum that you need to know to get by. And I tend to make it very, very like marketing.
And no math, right, Doug?
No equations. I do not like the equations. They do not like me. I got a math minor, and that's why my GPA in college sucked. So I try to stay away from math now, and I like lots of pictures. So when I go into a presentation, I'm just like, what are the pictures going to be? What are the graphics going to look like? And that's how I structure the whole thing. When Chris goes into a presentation, you know, if I'm BuzzFeed, Chris is like, you know, the IEEE or like a Nature paper. He's like a more austere professor in a tweed jacket, putting out the authoritative, you know, voice of experience on, you know, whatever topic he's talking about. So I'm usually trying to target the least experienced engineer that's in attendance and make sure that I'm bringing him along. And Chris will take the time to put in, you know, the full dissertation on the topic and be the authoritative source for it. And so there are different types of approaches. One's a lot more in-depth and technical, and one's more hands-on and maybe user-friendly. And you just kind of have to decide what you're going to be. If you're trying to make a fast, user-friendly webinar and you open up with a bunch of equations, then you're not going to be successful. So you have to match what you're trying to say with the types of, you know, the way that you structure the presentation.
All right, Pat, I want to add to that, because actually I think Doug's pointed out something really actually pretty important and interesting, which is like, so Doug and I have always had a slightly different approach to all of this, even in just in the tonality of how we write. So like when I write an app note or some kind of document, I always have like my mom on the side of my, you know, on my shoulder, like, you know, like worrying about the proper grammar and the proper English paper sort of mentality. Yeah. Doug writes in colloquial speech, and it drives me crazy. Like, I can't stand that he'll have these sort of like non sequiturs, and you know, he writes as if somebody was having a verbal conversation, which really works for his style, but it's much more informal for me. or too informal for my taste. And so within Marky, so, you know, he's marketing and I do marketing. And within the company of Marky Microwave, we have these two personalities. And so it's not like you can have both. Like, it's just sometimes it's more appropriate to do it one way and sometimes it's more appropriate to do it the other way. It's a choice. There's not a right or wrong.
Well, I think it's great that you have both in one company. So you get both ends of both different types of approaches. So can you guys tell me, what's the funniest thing that's ever happened to you on a podcast or webinar?
I shouldn't answer that. I think Doug should take a shot at it. And we'll see how it goes.
I'll give it a stab with names and maybe details redacted. Because we've only been doing this for about a year now, and the initial thought was to be a coffee with comedians, comedians and cars getting coffee, but for engineers, and the working title was Beers with Engineers. And initially we would drink, you know, we'd get together on a Friday afternoon and we'd drink beer and we'd record the podcasts. And the reason that we stopped doing that was really a technical problem, which was that the dynamic range of my voice would get more and more expanded as the podcast went on, to the point that I was just shouting into the microphone by, you know, 5 o'clock on Friday, two beers in. So we revised that back a little bit, but we taped some episodes at IMS in Boston. And when we were there, we would go to a bar or a club or a lobby or something, some drinking, location, get some beers with a guest, and then record the conversation. And during one of these, we were probably 45 minutes in. The conversation was just getting really good. I felt like we were getting to the best parts of the podcast. And a third party, or I guess a fourth party, showed up to say hi, because, you know, that's where we were. It was like sort of a mutual acquaintance. And the fourth party was three sheets to the wind, just like totally gone, as people are wont to do, you know, at parties at IMS. And just on tape, we were pretty adamant that everything was being recorded on tape, went on at length on topics that were not appropriate for certainly an academic conversation and not an industrial conversation, and definitely not a conversation that his boss would want to hear, and probably not a conversation that the family would want to hear. So we reiterated many times that this was on the recording, and this person was so gone that they would not leave. And eventually we ended up having to scrap the podcast because we couldn't get back on track after that.
So Chris, how would you compare the effectiveness of podcasts and webinars compared to other digital tools?
I can't, because we are very bad about publishing podcasts. So I don't even know if we understand yet if it's being, well, I don't even know if it's useful to us yet. The litmus test actually would have been IMS this year, because typically I think we know when we're doing a good job with our marketing when somebody we probably haven't actually met before, or especially in person, but maybe just a random person from a company we didn't know about comes up to Doug or I and just says, oh, I read that article or I listened to that podcast. That was awesome. That would be an indicator that it's a good idea for us, because that drives home the message that we're trying to get by, which is we want people to hear our stories and remember them and remember Marky, and then connotate what we do with our products, and they have a very keen understanding at that point of like what drives us. So I think the podcast, because it's so cheap, costs you almost nothing, it's always a good idea. The webinars take, what do we think, Doug, an order of magnitude more time per hour of content. So it's a huge investment from that point of view, but in all cases it's an infinite ROI potentially, just because you do it one time, you record it, and then it's digitized and it's free for everybody. And I don't think you can go wrong. It's just, how much time do you have? I think if Doug and I had fewer ideas to work on the R&D side of things, we'd probably be doing a podcast every week. But we just get, well, and then also, you know, his kids are constantly running into his office to delay the start of interviews, but whatever. So we'd be doing more podcasts if we could, but you can't go wrong. I think you just have to decide what your message is. It's as simple as that.
Doug, how effective are podcasts and webinars compared to giving an in-person session?
I think they're a lot more effective. For example, our engineer Jacob was planning to give a micro app at IMS this year. And I've given micro apps a number of times. They're pretty effective. Micro apps are effective in as much as they used to tape them. And now that they're not taped anymore, we stop supporting them.
You really are talking into a vacuum for a micro app, aren't you? Like, if you have the Thursday session, I mean, I actually got, this is a true story. I got a Thursday session for a micro app a couple years ago, and I just didn't go. Because I was like, what's the point? So they're never going to let me do it again, but that's okay.
Yeah, Thursday is a vacuum for sure. I mean, a good micro app, you'll get 20 people in attendance. Because people are busy at IMS, man. Yeah. There's so much going on. I see, when I look at micro apps, I'm like, oh, that one's good, that one's good, that one's good, that one's good. And I don't go to any of them because I'm busy the whole time and I don't have time to go and check them out, even though I would like to. At a webinar, you're much more likely to be able to attend the webinar because you probably only have one that day. And you can kind of like, if it ends up being a dud, then you can check your email, you know, in the middle of it. So for customers, it's a lot lower investment for them. So you can get a much bigger audience because you'll get people that are giving it a shot, but might not want to commit to it. So I think you get probably five times the audience for a webinar that, in our experience, that we'd get for a micro app. And then, like Chris said, you film it. You get great engagement from people. And then you film it and it's on there for the rest of time. And like Chris said, you have the additional benefit that, like, I think is very underappreciated. One of the major reasons to do these is that you learn more doing it than anybody learns watching it. You become such an expert on a topic in a way that you think that you know something until you sit down and try to present it. And you realize how many holes there are in your understanding that you have to go in and fill. And that's how you really become an expert at something.
Good point. And I think it's a thing we didn't leverage enough is that podcasts and webinars are both recorded, so you can continue to, you know, get people to watch them. You can remarket them. You can have even your sales force or other people, distributors, take a look at it and become educated too. So it has a broad use.
Yeah,
it's scalable. I think for Marky, we've changed a lot in the last 10 years and grown a lot. And the growth really forces you to think much more exponentially. And so that puts a priority on things that scale. You just can't work on things that require me or Doug to do every time, six times a week. And so this has always been Doug's approach to marketing, which is like, I'm going to write down everything I can and publish it such that the next time the customer comes asking for the information, I just send them a hyperlink and they read the blog. Or here's a hyperlink to the webinar we just published on biasing amplifiers. It's that simple. It's an exponential thing. You do it once. How many hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of hits are you going to get? And you can't go wrong as long as the information's correct. It really is. It's unthinkable these days not to do it.
Well, I think that's a great way to close this. I want to thank Chris and Doug for giving us their expert advice today. And this completes our five-part series on marketing in the age of COVID-19. If you've not seen any of the previous episodes, please check them out on our website in our video section. Thanks a lot, guys.